You're listening to Trek FM.
This episode of To the Journey is brought to you by TrekFan. TrekFan isn't just a Star Trek fan club, it's a challenge. You will explore new places, learn new things, and collaborate with other fans to solve puzzles, complete real-life mission objectives, and win great prizes. To face your first challenge and to find out more, head on over to TrekFan.org.
Hi, this is Robert Duncan McNeil, also known as Tom Paris from Star Trek Voyager. You're listening to Trek FM.
Maybe it's not the destination that matters. Maybe it's the journey.
To the journey.
Hello, everybody at home and in your cars or just walking down the street with us, coming straight into your ear holes. This is To the Journey.
To the Journey!
Today or tonight or this afternoon, whenever you're listening, because it's not live radio, you can take us in your pocket. We are talking about the Maylon. That's right.
Weird.
We exist only in your pocket. I don't have a real life. Lori doesn't have a real life. Char, she has a real life, but she's special. We only exist in your iPod or in your Windows or Android device or whatever, you know.
Whatever. In your ear holes, no less.
In your ear holes, no less.
We should add that to the drinking game.
Whenever we talk about ear holes, yeah.
Yeah, ear holes. Take a drink. Drink it.
Well, like I said, we're talking about the Maylon, and they didn't have a long run on Voyager, but they had an impactful one, and I thought they were pretty memorable, and you don't really hear too much about them amongst the fan community or online. I mean, people talk about the Borg, they'll talk about how much they hated the Kazon.
Which we have.
Which yes, we have. But no one really says, oh, yeah, the Maylon. Oh, I love the Maylon. Or, oh, the Maylon. I freaking hate the Maylon. No one has strong feelings either way. But I feel like they've produced at least two great episodes. Now, when you go on the website, you see that they have appearances in four episodes. It's really only three because they're just kind of mentioned in Think Tank. And
right.
Then when you boil it down with Extreme Risk and how it's an old-fashioned space race.
Yeah.
They're really just the competitive drive for that episode, and it's really a B'Elanna episode more than a Maylon episode.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you have two. You have Juggernaut and Knight, and Knight is where they were introduced. And I'd love to know what you guys thought when we saw Knight. Like, first off, what did you think of the episode, and what did you think of them when you first saw them?
As far as Knight is concerned, I like that episode for the most part. It's pretty good. And as for the Maylon, I think you make a very good point that for, let's say, 2.5 episodes?
There you go.
That for an alien species, they did a lot for that little amount of time, which is pretty good. So I don't necessarily have strong feelings for the Maylon myself. Like you said, people will typically think of an alien race and just say, oh, I love them or I hate them. And then the Maylon, they kind of fly under the radar a little bit. They're really good for when you're watching season 5, which is when these episodes occur. And then after that, you're onto something else. And it's not that they're forgettable, because I definitely remember them. But, yeah.
See, that's the thing. Like, yeah. They're very memorable, but when I started doing my research, I was like, oh, yeah, I'm going to watch all of the Maylon episodes. You know, let's hunker down and get ready for a marathon. And then I'm like, oh, yeah, it's really only 2.5 episodes.
Yeah, and that's stretching
yeah.
it. Yeah.
For us hardcore fans, that's not a marathon. We could do that in our sleep.
That's like a meal, sitting for
yeah,
a meal.
Yeah, that's a meal.
Yeah, that's dinner time.
That's
what are you
it.
Talking about?
That's all that is.
So, Lori, what did you think of Knight and the introduction of Maylon?
Oh, they were kind of interesting. I mean, like, the thing I remembered about them the most when I went back and rewatched was when that guy, what was his name? Vrelk, or whatever his name was, the first guy.
Imk.
There you go. Anyway, when he shows up on the transporter pad, and I think Janeway said, oh, we're going to have to talk to you right here because you're leaking. And I thought, that's really kind of gross.
Right. I think if anybody remembers anything about the Maylon, it's the fact that they're these trashy, leaky, just kind of all around gross they have fumes coming off of them no matter where they are kind of people.
Yeah, yeah. They have like they could be on Dirty Jobs on that show.
I think they should have done an episode of Dirty Jobs with the Malon for sure.
Can you? No. I want to seriously think about this. I know you guys are joking, but that would be an amazing episode.
It really would be. It totally would, because they're doing hazardous waste disposal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How much more dirty do you want to get?
That's about as dirty as it gets. Dirty job aliens. That's
there
them.
You go.
That is them.
Well, okay, you know how they came out with the Haynes manual for the Enterprise and also the Klingon Bird of Prey?
Mm-hmm.
That was such a big deal because Haynes is such a respectable magazine, and it is the go-to manual for any car that it does. And so it just made me think, what if they did a legitimate episode of Dirty Jobs for the Malon and they treated it completely serious and did not say, oh, yeah, you'll find these guys on Star Trek Voyager. This is just a fun show we're going to do. No, they were like, okay, we have a treat for you tonight. We are going to investigate the Malon and how they dump their waste in space.
I love it.
I'd watch that show.
Mm. Oh, I totally would.
Oh, yeah.
Now, okay, so the introduction of Malon, as we talked about, is in Night, and I think I like this episode more than you guys. You guys are just kind of like, eh, I really liked it because we got to see a little Captain Proton, we got to see some mysterious aliens, and we got to see Captain Janeway in a different light, kind of like a recluse, a shut-in, and you've never really seen a captain do that. Now, some people would say that's because she's a poor captain. She needs to be amongst her people.
No
captain has ever gone through this before in the history of Starfleet. So she's allowed to have a few mental health days, as my wife would put it.
Yeah, definitely.
Hey, I've been known to take a mental health day or two myself, and I am not captaining a starship.
And I think I mentioned this to you guys before, this was a long time ago, about how I love that moment where they had a senior staff meeting and all of them were like, yeah, there's nothing to report, we're in a void here, okay, there's mm-hmm. nothing to do, mm-hmm. there's literally nothing to do, and they started talking about Janeway and they're like, when's she gonna come out, what's gonna happen, and Chakotay gets angry with them.
Yeah, testy.
I love how defensive he was of his captain. He's just like, listen, she can command the ship for wherever the hell she wants. Understood? You know, and,
yeah.
And then they're like,
dismissed.
Oh, struck a nerve. Okay, yeah. So I felt like maybe Night isn't that great of an episode, but it gave us a lot of cool moments. And it gave us echoes of the void.
It does. Don't get me wrong. I do like Night for a lot of reasons, but while we're talking about Janeway, what kind of irks me about Night is the fact that we are led to believe that she's in this deep depression, and then all she needs is a crisis to get out of it. I don't think so. That's not how depression works, okay? The doctor gave her a hypospray of Zoloft or something. Apparently it started kicking in, because by the end of it, she did seem to be well on her way, but anybody who has been there realizes that it takes weeks, sometimes months. Who knows? Depending on how depressed you are, it could be even years. You just don't get out of it overnight.
But they did say that they had already been in that void 2 months.
Right.
And she said it started when we came into this part of space. So it had been 2 months.
It didn't happen overnight.
No. No.
So it shouldn't recover overnight. That was my big thing with Night.
No, I was just saying because maybe she's had time to, I don't know, we don't know her to be this way. Maybe she gets over things that fast. Who knows?
Well, if you've read Mosaic, one of the novels that Jerry Taylor wrote, this is nothing new for Captain Janeway. She has suffered at least one, well, no, actually, technically two. Yeah, two big episodes of depression before. One was in the novel where...
That's true. Yeah.
Her fiancé, Justin, and her father both died in that shuttle crash. But then the other one, Tuvok mentions it in the episode with the USS Billings and all that happened there.
Yeah.
So she kind of has like this proneness to depression. And so that leads me to believe she's not going to get out of this very easily.
I don't know that you can compare, though, your fiancé and your father dying to being stuck somewhere. I think those things are, one is way more extreme than the other. We could probably go on and on about this, but...
We could. We should...
We could go on and on. Like Char, you make an interesting point, and, like, depression is a real thing, and it's a real disease, and it's very hard to get out of. And I, with, but with Laurie, I feel like the timeline is on your side when it comes to how it goes. Like, Char, you're right. It doesn't happen overnight.
Mm-hmm.
And Laurie, you're like, she's been in this for 2 months. And sometimes I've seen depression last for months. I've seen it last for years, just like you guys. And so, you know, it depends on the individual. But
right,
I felt like it was interesting. Let's focus on how they used it for the character. I felt like they used it at the right time.
Mm-hmm,
I felt like this was a proper amount of time throughout the series, because we shouldn't have seen this in season one, season two, season three. It was season five. Like, this is the heart of Voyager. This is a good chunk. This is where, wow, I've seen some crap. I've seen some crew die.
Yeah, and, been through some things. And yeah, season five really does make sense as for when it started. But we're talking an awful lot about Night. I think we could have a whole discussion on this episode, this issue alone. But we are here to talk about the Melon. So what do you guys think about the whole social commentary aspect of the Melon? The whole kind of NIMBY thing. They've got this really nice home world, but they're generating a whole bunch of toxic waste to produce it. And so they take it wherever they have to get rid of it.
I think, I can't remember if it's this episode or another one, where they... It seems like every single time an alien race tries to justify themselves to the Voyager crew, they say, no, you don't understand. If we don't do this, then our society will crumble. Like, listen, we weren't always this way. Or we were scientists. We were artists. It's always science and art. It's always what it is. We're like sculptors. And, you know, and it's just, it's always like science and art, or like art and writers. And it's, that is always the excuse. Like, seriously, watch the show.
No, you're right.
You're
because
right.
What was it, Juggernaut, where one of those people on the Melon ship, he says, I only do this part-time. My other job is as a sculptor or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and if you watch, like, an episode with the Vidians, they're like, no, if you saw our homeworld before the disease struck, we were artists and scientists and writers, you know, and just, we were revered for our sculpture, whatever, you know, it's always that. And it's just once, like, I guess the only time we got it with, we got true, like, somebody that was actually speaking the truth was with the Hirogen. We're like, no, we were always warriors. Yeah, we just want to kill stuff.
Those Hirogen, they don't hold back, do they? They're very straightforward.
Yeah. They didn't care.
I admire their honesty.
I did like, however, that Janeway was going to totally break the rules, give out technology.
Oh, again. Yeah. She's like, here.
Right.
And then I loved how he's like, you know what? This would be good for my race and other races, but it would put me out of a job. So, no.
Yeah. There is this aspect to it. Yeah. We could improve ourselves, but then I'd be bankrupt. And I don't see any other way I could generate income based off of this new technology.
Yeah.
Oh, come on. What?
I loved it.
I think it's a great metaphor.
It really is. Yes.
Like the oil companies or any kind of big corporation that you hate out there in the world who stands to gain from everybody else's loss. This is the Melon. This is what they're doing. And they, I mean, we probably could have more gas efficient cars if you want to get into this debate or something to that effect. But there's probably just a little bit of struggle out there pushing back saying, no, not while we have oil.
Yeah, for real.
I just loved how how immediately when the Melon came on, the main guy came on the view screen, he's like, I use 6 spatial charges. I expect to be compensated. Like, it wasn't even like, hey, you okay? It's like, no, I helped you. I didn't like that I helped you. And I expect to be paid.
Pay up right now. Uh-huh.
The Ferengi would be so proud of their capitalistic ways.
They sure would.
It made me think about, there was an episode of... Do you guys remember Lois and Clark, The Adventures of Lois and Clark?
I remember the show, but I didn't watch it.
Yeah, kind of.
Well, okay, so there was an episode where this guy like gets powers all of a sudden, just like Superman's. And instead of just being a superhero, like he is a superhero, but he charges people after he saves them. Like, caught you in midair, that's going to be $50. Now, I saved you and your entire family. That's a family of 4, so that's going to be $147 plus tax. You know, and so it was just... hysterical, and it just made, every time I watch this, it makes me think of that. Yeah,
that's great.
So I did like how we were introduced later on to different types of Melons, where it made us realize that oftentimes in Star Trek, when we get one person from one race, we're like, oh, the entire race is that way. Mm-hmm. Now, yeah. Can you imagine if humans were judged that way? There's 7 billion of us, and they get one representative, and he's like the biggest jerk on the planet, and they're like, oh yeah, all humans must be that way.
But yeah, planet D-bag right here.
Exactly. So we get an episode and we get to see some actually good people who are like, no, I'm trying to feed my family here. I'm sorry. Like,
right.
This is, like, I don't want to die. I don't want to die of radiation poisoning. I do this so that my planet can live on without this. And I'm actually a good guy. You know, I'm not here to kill anybody. I'm just trying to make a living. And
yeah. How many people are out there in the world who are just like that? I'm just doing my job. I'm just taking care of my family. I'm just going about my day.
And that was something I read on Memory Alpha about these guys. Like, they would be regarded as heroes on their home world for doing what they did.
Point.
Like, all that radiation sickness that they had, nobody would go, oh my God, you're so gross, like we would do. They would,
right.
That people were like, wow, that's like a badge of honor for you to have that, to be sick.
It's sort of like how we support our troops because they're putting their lives on the line for us as a people.
Mm-hmm.
How they're respected is definitely like how we respect our soldiers. But the thing is, what they're actually doing is much more closer to our garbage men.
Right.
And yet, like, if you were at a party and someone said, hey, what do you do? And like, oh, I'm a garbage man or I'm a garbage woman. They'd be they'd look at their shoes and go, oh, sorry, I asked.
Right. Yeah, that's not exactly an occupation with a lot of dignity in most people's eyes, although it's a very necessary job.
Definitely.
Very, like, if I ever met one, I'd shake their hand twice and say, thank you.
Me too, man, because that is not a fun job. It can be.
Mm-mm, no. Mm-mm.
I can't say I've done it, but thank God there's people out there who do it, because otherwise we'd have trash everywhere.
Seriously.
Now, I did notice something about these episodes. There's a running theme, and that theme is definitely B'Elanna.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, if you look at Extreme Risk and Juggernaut, now, in Night, she's not the focus, but, like, with Extreme Risk, with the space race, and Juggernaut, she's over there. It's funny that, like, we have two, like, out of these very minimal 3 episodes, 2/3 of them is B'Elanna focused.
Yeah, why is that?
And, like, is it because she's the engineer?
Maybe.
And
this
is an engineering feat. You know, I guess that would have to be, like, with the Malon, you know, like, they're, like, with her job with waste extraction or something like that, it's all automatic because she has the technology.
Mm-hmm.
And she, like, any radiation that would come from the warp core, so she has to deal with it. So I guess that's the reason why.
Yeah, maybe so. But then, yeah, I suppose with Juggernaut, yeah, they're working on getting deck by deck to contaminate those sections that were just gonna basically explode, right? And with Extreme Risk, they were designing a shuttle. Well, you have to have an engineer for that.
Yeah.
Although she almost didn't go on the flight, but thank goodness she did.
I did like in a how we got a little, what's his name? I think his name is Canada, Ron Canada. He plays Fezzik, not Fezzik from Princess Bride, but Fezzik in Juggernaut. And he played Chapok in DS9, the Klingon lawyer. And he was also in a TNG episode from the Masterpiece Society. And he played a human there. All right, not a human, but a human-looking person. And so Ron Canada has been in TNG, DS9, and Voyager. And I absolutely love seeing recurring characters throughout the Star Trek franchise. And I love him as an actor. And I thought he did a fantastic job of doing of what we talked about, making a sympathetic Malon.
Yeah,
sure. And you know what? I can kind of understand what the guy was saying. No, I can't say I would understand. I take that back. When he was saying he didn't want that technology because then he'd be out of a job, I thought, okay, seriously, when they eliminated poverty and disease and all that on Earth, think of all the people that were put out of a job.
Yeah.
But at the same time, think of all that they could do with themselves afterwards. They just bettered themselves. They went back to school or they just improved themselves as people. But I guess at first, maybe the reaction would be the way that guy reacted. No, I got to have my dough. What are you talking about?
Yeah, that's the thing. We've never saw the resistance because by the time Enterprise came out, like, that's the earliest view of the Federation we've seen.
Mm-hmm.
Or not Federation, but, you know, Starfleet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
they even made a comment. They're like, we got rid of disease and poverty and war in 100 years. That's not too shabby. Those 100 years would be fascinating to watch.
It really would be. Yeah,
it would be. Because how did we go from everybody out for themselves in the aftermath of a major world war to supporting the greater good and actually working together?
Yeah. Like that, it probably would have taken 100 years.
Yeah, easy.
Easily.
I mean, look
definitely.
At where we are right now.
Yeah.
Oy.
Now, Juggernaut, as we were talking about earlier about great moments, and these may not be great episodes, but they gave us great moments. In Juggernaut, it gave us Miss Turtlehead.
You are correct. That's a great one.
What did you guys think about the I can never remember how to pronounce it. Is it Vihar? What is it?
Oh gosh.
Basically,
you know what's sad is I just watched this episode in preparation for the podcast and I can't remember. I'm a bad fan.
Let's just say Vihar, and
okay.
And we'll, people are probably shouting in their cars right now because we're pronouncing it wrong, but
just go to the forums and tell us off, please. Trek.fm/forums. That's what the forum is for.
I love that there was a, even in this century and in another culture, there's a ghost story or a zombie story to tell.
Oh, yeah.
Like, no, I'm not going down there. No. There's monsters down there.
Boogeyman, no way.
I don't know. I kind of just yawn at that aspect of the story. I don't think too terribly much of it. I'm sorry to Tristan. He's just shaking his head right now, audience.
I liked it so much because I like the whole idea. They're like, okay, you know, we work on the bridge. We work around the ship. But there's got to be someone who has to work in the core. And like, yeah, that person gets a lot of money. But how is that worth it? And I just, like, when he comes out, he's a literal monster. Because he's lost all his hair. He's
irradiated. Yeah.
Very much. Yeah. I mean, we see a couple of boils here and there on your average Malon, but this guy, his whole face was a boil.
Yeah, one great boil. And like, even the guy said, he's like, I've probably lost, what did he say, like 10 years of his life just even being on the ship.
Uh-huh.
And the core workers, come on.
Yeah, they've got to be cutting their lifespan, at least in half, if not more.
At least, if not more, yeah.
Yeah. I like B'Elanna's line about what good is doing such a hazardous job for the money if you can't enjoy the money. What, you can't do that when you're dead.
If you're not around to spend it, yeah.
Right.
I love that Neelix had a radiation remedy. I'm like, of course you do.
Yeah, I mean, that was obviously thrown in for comedic effort, which it semi-succeeds, but what sells it for me is Ethan Phillips' face. It just really trepidatiously, okay, I'm going to guzzle this, I'm going to try, and then he takes the smallest of bites, and he's just, oh, it's awful. It's sort of like making a kid try to take down cough syrup.
I love it. He's like, yeah, once you get past the choking reflex, it's really not so bad.
I could throw in a dirty comment, but I'll refrain.
It just made me think of like, it's like once you pick out the hairs, the yak's milk is actually quite nutritious.
Oh, God. Mm-mm. Yeah, eat up. And I do like how Chakotay is just, no thanks, I'll pass. It's not worth the risk. I'll choose the radiation.
Now, one thing that we haven't mentioned that this whole Malon arc gave us, and that's the Delta Flyer.
Yeah, right. Definitely.
One of the single greatest ship inventions in the history of Star Trek.
Yeah, Tom Paris's baby. And B'Elanna's too, I suppose, although she was sort of absent toward the very end because of what she was going through. But yeah, let's talk about this badass little flyer because it's a sleek little thing.
It was so great that, you know, like our greatest inventions have come from necessity. If you look at the history of our culture, you look at World War II and what we invented, like whenever people piss us off, that's when we build big stuff. And
yes,
I love that this was no different. Like the Delta Flyer, they could have used it years ago, but they're like, you know what? Tom is just like, I am sick of this. I'm sick of losing all these shuttles because they're so easy to be destroyed. And so let's build one that won't get easily destroyed, even though it does get destroyed. But we're not going to talk about that.
We don't need to talk about that.
Mm-mm. We don't need to talk about that.
No.
I love that they were spying on the Malon and the Malon was spying on them. And it was just And I love that the Malon said, they're like, listen, we are expert salvagers. Trust me, we know what we're doing. You're not going to win. And then Tom's mm-hmm. like, no, we got the Flyboy here.
That's right. We've got Flyboy and Turtlehead on the case and Harry. So Space Race is on.
I love that Janeway even called it an old-fashioned space race.
Oh, yeah. I got such a kick out of that line. I loved it.
And we even, like, I love that moment when Tom tried to put wing, like, extra fins on it.
Oh, yeah. It is not a hot rod.
I would have loved to have seen flames or some sort of pinup on it.
You know he would have done it, too.
All they let him have was just the name of it painted in lovely letters on the side.
Yeah, and, like, the really cool
cursive type. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Cursive type, thank you.
Yeah. Yes, now an ancient dying art.
Yeah.
My mother actually knows how to do calligraphy, and she does it really well. In fact, like, I've had friends call me up and say, like, we need something custom made. Can you please call your mom?
Is your mom for hire? Well, I was actually talking about cursive being a lost dying art. I'd say calligraphy has got more of a chance.
Probably. Yeah.
See, yeah, I'm one of those who would not miss cursive whatsoever.
No.
If it died,
oh, no. So. I gave it up, I think, as soon as I was allowed to in sixth grade. I don't know. Lori, yeah. You're an elementary school teacher. Do they still teach cursive writing?
Yeah, we actually teach it at the end of third grade. They look forward to it. Yeah. Kids love it, but then after
really?
That... Well, because they're 8 years old and they've never done it before and they think it's awesome and cool. But then I'm waiting for the thumbprint thing. I'm looking forward to that. Bam.
Oh, yeah.
Now you know.
Okay. Ah. Well, let's talk about this because you see that a couple times in Star Trek, mainly in Deep Space Nine with the thumbprint. And I am all for this. I am absolutely all for this. And I will talk about this with my in-laws and they're like, no, like that's an invasion of privacy. No, like the government is going to track us. And what if somebody just cuts off your thumb?
Wait, aren't they tracking us already for one thing?
Yeah, exactly. And they always have this excuse. What, somebody could just cut off your thumb. And I was like, do you really think that this person could take a bloody thumb to Best Buy and buy a TV?
I want to see that. I want to see it.
Oh, here, let me get this bloody thumb out of my purse.
Yeah, exactly.
Just one second. Let me screw this on.
And also, I've had my credit card stolen twice. My credit card number stolen twice. Mm. And it was never online. It was never anything like that. It was always in a coffee shop or a restaurant. And it is, just think about it. People, like, bad people will steal your credit card number without even thinking about it. They will think at least twice before they cut off your thumb.
I hope so.
Twice is better than zero.
Twice is better than zero. So, yeah.
That's funny.
And if you don't have a thumb, say your thumb does get caught off, unfortunately, you've got 9 other fingers.
There you go.
You've got another thumb.
You've got another thumb. And then you've got all the other ones. You could do something. You could make some kind of arrangement.
That's right.
Well, we've jumped all over the place today, mainly because...
We have.
There's really not that much content when it comes to the Malon. So let's just do a quick wrap-up. Final thoughts on the Malon, Char.
Okay. Well, yeah, this is kind of a shorter show, but for an alien race that was in 2.5 episodes, they did pretty good. We got to learn quite a bit about their culture. We learned that they are very interested in money, much like the Ferengi. They have this kind of hazardous job that's considered an honor. And I also like the fact that they really just don't put up with people's crap. I mean, they're very straightforward. Just, okay, this is clearly not going anywhere. This conversation is null. I'm out of here. I'm done here. As that one guy said in Night, beam me off of here. I think they made some really good social commentary, too, about taking out the trash and all that fun stuff. So for a race we didn't see that much, not too bad.
Lori, what did you think?
Yeah, I was thinking along the same lines, too. I think what really struck me was this social commentary, like how we think of everything's really convenient for us, but somebody's taking care of the dirty work somewhere along the lines. And we see these guys and really without any regard for anybody else, for another race that they're destroying by dumping that waste. I thought that was a really interesting social commentary.
Definitely.
Yeah, I pretty much love, I love Mainline episodes. I love their makeup. I love their hair. I love their look. I love their outfits. I love their ships. I think the design of them is very, very good. And
yeah, they did a good job.
Like, even if you took out the great social commentary that you guys talked about, the design of them is always good. You can always rely on Voyager to give us well-designed aliens.
Yeah, it's true. Even if you know nothing about these guys, you can tell just by their ship because things are leaking out of it. There's green matter coming out everywhere. Or on their faces, these boils and stuff or things coming out of their uniform. Yeah. It says a lot about who they are and what they're doing.
Well, this has been fun. I love talking about aliens, and I can't wait till we talk about the next one. But the thing is, this isn't the only thing that we've been talking about on Trek FM this week. So here's a quick look at what you might have missed on other shows around the network. Previously on Trek.fm, The Orb.
Sacrifice of Angels.
Again, Dukat in his overconfidence. Should we have anybody go after him? No.
Yeah,
fine.
Just let him go.
Yeah,
that's
just,
right.
I mean, we'll destroy him when he gets here.
The Ready Room.
Khan.
But because they had to do this convolution, and they don't, Kirk should have had a reaction to that being Khan. And when he says the name Khan, that should mean, he didn't say my name is Noonien, you know, he said Khan. And you would at least have a thing in your mind going, oh, genetically enhanced Khan, this has got to be the Khan.
To the journey!
The fight.
I'll never forgive you, listeners, for putting me through watching that again. Although this episode did give us the line, was your opponent firing some type of energy weapon at you? And then Chakotay goes, just his gloves. Commentary, Trek Stars.
Richard Matheson recap.
And my favorite chapter in the Matheson life is when he was hired by Rod Serling to work on The Twilight Zone, the first season of The Twilight Zone, because that is a fantastic moment in history where Rod Serling was creating something that would eventually become an incredibly important artifact of history.
Warp 5.
The Mako.
Well, the employment arrangements are actually relatively interesting to contemplate. As you know, you've joked about whether they were contractors or not. But as you've stated, they are outside of Starfleet.
Trek News and Views.
7 of 9 day.
She was a bit overused, and it was a bit ridiculous some of the things her magical nanoprobes could do, but...
Literary Treks.
Mission's End.
The question is, do you feel like Section 31 is overused? Everyone wants to use Section 31, and so they just keep popping up in every story, and I think sometimes it does a disservice to the idea of Section 31.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm. All right, so you got a little taste of what we were talking about, and so please check out these shows. We have so many shows on Trek FM. Because we have so many shows, you can get a daily fix of Trek. And let's face it, there's no Trek on TV anymore, so how else are you going to get it? You're going to come to us. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Windows Phone, Xbox, everything. You pretty much just go to our website and you will be able to find us anywhere.
Yeah. If you have the internet, you can find us. You can download our podcast and listen to us.
You can stream us. You can download us from the website. All you have to do is just visit trek.fm/PD for the podcast directory and to get all the links. And before we go, we need to give a major shout out to CompleteMySong.com for leaving us a beautiful 5-star review on iTunes. Seriously, like, this is the review to judge all others. This is how great this was.
It is. I want everybody to go on iTunes and, you know, on that little part of the reviews that say, was this helpful? Click yes.
Click
because
yes.
It's that beautiful. Very nicely, concisely written. And of course, lots of praise for us. So how can we not love that, guys?
Exactly. So thank you so much for your kind words. Now tune in next week, because this episode was a normal 30 minutes like our every other episode, but next week is going to be 42 minutes. And I think you can guess why. And we're going to be talking about the episode Collective. So tune in next week. This is going to be fun. Thank you so much for listening, and please tune in next week. Until then, this has been To the Journey.
To the Journey!